Listen, all this takes a lot of getting used to. And you do get used to it after a while. There's three things I'll always miss, though. One, not having to watch my step all the time. Two, forget about two. And three.
It was Mr. Sludge's neighborhood. I'm sure that's the third thing he missed. Welcome back to the podcast that the other members of the Quarter Nerds pretend isn't in their RSS feed. This week I promise that the show will be filled with thrills, chills, swills, and pills. But first we gotta pay the bills. So I'm glad we got a new multi-week sponsor, Viridian Dynamics.
Viridian Dynamics. Teamwork. It's a beautiful thing. In business, it means working together for a common goal. X-rays show that when people work together, they're happier and less likely to do something weird. Viridian Dynamics, teamwork. It keeps our employees gruntled.
And now, the news!
That's right, 8th edition rules for Warhammer 40K have arrived and it is shaking up the tabletop gaming world. A lot of effort has been put into these rules and changes have been made all over the game, some big and some very big. But the game is only a third of the reason why we love 40K. Another third is the building and painting, which admittedly, some have taken more time on than others. The final third is what I'm going to talk about here, and that is the lore changes. Cue ominous music. The Satyric's Maledictum tore the Imperium apart, and trouble came with it, as the Imperium had not seen in over 10,000 years. The Astronomicon flickered and went dark, in an instant replacing the Imperium of Man with millions of isolated worlds, each alone in the dark, deep void. Khorne sent 88 demon legions to assault the Imperial Palace. The Legion of the Damned have appeared on hundreds of worlds, throwing back the forces of chaos wherever they stand. The Astronomicon flared back into blazing glory, on to illuminate an Imperium filled with horror. Over half the Astartes chapters are missing, with a dozen confirmed destroyed during the darkness. On Armageddon, the tide of demons was so strong that the orcs and humans fought as one simply to survive. The Blood Angels have recalled their successor chapters to aid in their homeworld, which have been overrun with hundreds of Tyranid splinter groups. All the chapters who returned lost their chapter masters during that fight. As Commander Dante prepared to die fighting, Primarch of the Ultramarines, Robert Gilliman, arrived to break the last of the Tyranid forces, with possible aid from the demonic forces of Khorne, oddly enough. Mortarion, or should I say, Mortarion! And the Death Guard led the crusade upon Ultramar, only to have it grind to the halt at the hands of Gilliman. The two brothers faced off against each other in combat before the Chaos forces withdrew. One stable passage through the Satyric's Maledictum had been discovered, the Nakmund system, home to the lost household of fallen knights and their Chaos Marine allies and fleets. Only the foolhardy of the Imperium dare try to run that passage. Finally, there's this regarding the events within the Imperial Palace. The Imperial Custodes have been marshaled. I'll let that ramification sink in.
Viridian Dynamics. Bosses. Everybody has one. Without bosses, we'd be like these worms. Disgusting. Bosses make everything better. So listen to your boss. And don't question them. Otherwise, you're no better than a worm. Viridian Dynamics. Bosses. Necessary.
In I Expect Donald Trump to Sue Sony Soon news, the rumors have proven true and Sony is launching a golden PlayStation 4. The Metallic Console arrives as part of the Days of Play sale, which Sony is billing as a thank you event for its fans. In addition to the special edition 1TB console, fans will see special deals on games and accessories, including a matching gold DualShock 4. Quote, the PlayStation Store will see something cheap every day, said Jim Ryan, head of global sales and marketing in Europe. We are intrigued to see how people respond to the event at a time that is traditionally very quiet for games. We're going to have some really good deals, end quote. The event will run for 9 days, beginning on June 9th. just before the start of E3, and running until June 17th. Sales will change up every day. During the sale, the Golden PlayStation 4 will cost $249, part of a larger temporary price drop across a number of PlayStation 4 models. Once the sale is up, the console will return to the PlayStation 4's standard price of $299. So buy one while you can. That is, if you don't mind having a gauche hunk of plastic in your entertainment center. I mean, gold? Really?
Viridian Dynamics. Machines. When you were little, you wanted to be one. Now we're working to make that happen by taking the best things about people and the best things about machines and combining them into something strong and, we hope, loving. Viridian Dynamics. Man and machines. Best friends forever.
In I can't believe I'm going to be talking about Apple this long news, Apple has released a ton of new info about their product line at WWDC only a short time after some of their specs were prematurely leaked. So I'll give you a brief rundown of some of the things I find newsworthy from their presentation. Apple Siri speaker is a $350 HomePod. Yep, the one more thing during the WWDC presentation was Apple's oft-rumored living room assistant. As it turns out, the HomePod is differentiating itself from the competition by focusing in on audio quality. Inside, it holds 4-inch woofer, 7 tweeters, and one A8 processor. And in a demo, it sounded better than the Sonos Play, the Amazon Echo, and, well, anything else on the market. We'll find out more about what can be done before it ships in December, but for now, Apple's pitch is focusing on simple home automation and multi-room audio with AirPlay 2. There's a new iPad Pro. Now, just last year, after Apple introduced the smaller, capable 9.7-inch iPad Pro, the company has replaced it with a larger model, with a 10.5-inch screen. It has a display that's 20% larger than its predecessor, squeezed into essentially the same space by reducing the bezels by 40%. Perhaps, most importantly from physical perspective, is the tablet will weigh just 1 pound. If the tablet market isn't completely dead, this may help revitalize it. Apple's macOS High Sierra adds faster Safari browser and a new file system. It's not the grandest of macOS updates, but Apple's web browser gets some love from the High Sierra upgrade. Senior VP of Software Engineering Craig Federighi claimed that the upgrade Safari tops all the desktop browsers in speed. He even went as far as to say it's the world's fastest desktop browser. Sure it is. The browser also features autoplay blocking. It detects sites that shouldn't be playing video and pauses them. With the updates, macOS also finally supports virtual reality, and Apple's external GPU dev kit will be what virtual reality creators will need. Also, say hello to Apple's file system. Apple claims that High Sierra is the fastest operating system ever, and the Apple file is part of that, offering much better performance and security than before. As Federighi showed on stage, copying files now runs nearly instantly on Apple file, compared to the now decades-old HFS file system. Along with the speed, APFS supports far more files than ever, letting you put 9 quintillion of them in a single volume. Security-wise, it includes multi-key encryption, making it tough for bad guys, or law enforcement, or Russian spies, to crack even if they have physical access to your drive. That encryption will also work in a unified way across all of Apple's devices. This is by far the most impressive and important thing Apple has created, and nobody will really care about it because it's not shiny. Apple's iMac Pro is the most powerful computer ever, but that's not much saying much from their products in the past. Apple has another iMac to reveal. The iMac Pro is a powerful, familiar-looking all-in-one, decked in space gray, and the company says it's the most powerful Mac ever, period. The Pro-level computer will ship with up to 18-core Xeon processors, as well as Radeon Pro Vega graphics. That's apparently enough for up to 11 teraflops for a single precision, or 22 teraflops at half precision processing power. The 27-inch Retina 5K display lies on top of the all-flash memory architecture with an all-new thermal design, adding 80% more cooling capacity to match all that processing power. iOS 11 gets smarter and puts your iPad to work. The latest version of Apple's mobile operating system features a smarter version of Siri that does a better job of understanding what you need to know by presenting that information when it's relevant. Apple Maps is ready to navigate indoors. Sure it is. New tools will give augmented reality apps like Pokemon Go a boost, and the App Store is getting its first major redesign in, well, forever. Also, a new Do Not Disturb While Driving feature is intended to help people keep their eyes on the road, while the iMessage and Apple Pay are teaming up for person-to-person payments. On iPad, the changes are meant to make you more productive. A new dock will try to guess which apps you'll need next and is similar to the same features on the macOS. Meanwhile, slide-over multitasking makes it easier to use more of the one app at once. There's a cloud-connected file manager app, and drag-and-drop is ready to move more of the information you deal with on a daily basis, like multiple pictures and links. Apple kicked off its WWDC event quickly by mentioning its wrist and TV-based platforms, albeit briefly. For now, the only Apple TV news is that Amazon Prime Video app is on its way, years after everybody else had it. While the Apple Watch is getting another big update, as with Watch OS 4, there's a new Siri-powered watch face that takes a few hints from Google Now with contextual updates, like traffic alerts when it's time to go to work, a revamped dock and improved fitness features to track all of your workouts. Oh, and there's also some game called Monument Valley 2. Now, normally I would call that a wrap to the news segment, but the response I saw from Apple's presentation was less enthusiastic than I anticipated. Usually the Apple-loving masses would be quick to glom onto their products, tell the world of their superiority, and pick up their mint chai no-caf almond milk latte after their spin class. But now some of those same people are also technology writers and work at prestigious news outlets. It also seems that the more financially focused a publication, the more critical they were of Apple. Take Forbes and Bloomberg, for example. Both had writers write pieces that covered the event, claiming that Apple just did Microsoft a huge favor. From Ewan Spence's piece in Forbes, quote, "First they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then you win. Somewhere in Redmond, Microsoft's Surface team will have been watching the keynote from Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference and decided that Tim Cook and his team had validated Microsoft's approach to bleeding edge of technology. Following years of piloting new ideas with the Surface hardware and integration of Windows 10 with cloud-based approach, Microsoft has carved out a vision of where it believes the technological world is heading. Following a few steps behind them is Apple, confirming that Redmond's moves were the correct ones," end quote. While Alex Webb from Bloomberg writes, quote, "Apple Inc.'s HomePod speaker made headlines at the company's annual developer conference, but for thousands of developers at the event, the convention was abuzz with another topic, augmented reality," end quote. Both articles clearly demonstrate how Apple has moved away from innovation and cutting-edge technology and has decided to let other companies R&D for them. This does lead to higher short-term profit margins, but in the patent troll-infested world we live, which Microsoft and Apple are huge players in, this will inevitably lead to slower long-term growth. And that's fine. However, you will see Apple's customers' base continue to shrink as a result due to elementary market truths. If someone can make a product better than you and sell it for less, then the customers will buy the cheaper product. Take Apple's new laptops, for instance. With the MacBooks and the MacBook Pros announced at WWDC, Apple did what it had to do and bumped the specifications up to include Kaby Lake chipsets on the machines. But that left it at that. Months after Windows 10-powered laptops picked up Intel's latest technology, Tim Cook is offering up parity for more money. No doubt Microsoft's manufacturing partners are already hard at work on the next generation of machines, while Apple has been catching up. And that's the problem with letting your competition do research and development for you.
Viridian Dynamics. Individuals. We believe everyone is special, irreplaceable, and will follow the thing walking in front of it. That's why we celebrate all individuals, even ones going nowhere. Viridian Dynamics, because you can't spell individual without Viridian. And you. And a no.
I think the wheel of insanity has been fairly nice to me lately. Let's see if this trend will continue. It says, "You've talked a lot of news today, so maybe read a poem instead of boring people with your opinions?" Damn, Wheel, that's harsh. But point taken. Like every 30-something adult that grew up listening to alternative music in the 90s, I had a love of poetry. Usually the dark and depressing kind, because as Bart Simpson told us, making teenagers depressed is like shooting fish in a barrel. But as I got older, I left Edgar Allan Poe and Samuel Taylor Coleridge by the wayside and stopped being so emo. Until I had a kid. Then something weird happens on the inside of you and emotions are allowed to leak out. I rediscovered the poetry my parents read to me as a youth, like Mother Goose and even Longfellow. Yet one poem has always stood the test of time. It was wrote by a man born in Lawrence, Massachusetts in 1840 and raised in nearby Worcester. He graduated magna cum laude in philosophy from Harvard University in 1885, where he had been editor of the Harvard Lampoon and member of the theatrical society Hasty Pudding. William Randolph Hearst, a friend from both activities, hired Thayer as a humor columnist for the San Francisco Examiner in 1886 to 1888. It was in 1888 he wrote what I believe to be the greatest poem in the English language, Casey at Bat. The outlook wasn't brilliant for the Mudville Nine that day. The score stood 2-4, but with one inning more to play. And then with Cooney died at first and Barrows did the same, a sickly silence fell upon the patrons of the game. A straggling few got up to go in deep despair. The rest clung to the hope that springs eternal in the human breast. They thought if only Casey could get a whack at that, they'd put even money now with Casey at the bat. But Flynn preceded Casey, and also so did Jimmy Blake. And the former was a Lulu and the latter was a cake. So upon the stricken multitude grim melancholy sat, for there seemed but little chance of Casey getting to the bat. But Finn let drive a signal to the wonderment of all, and Blake, the much despised, tore the cover off the ball. And when the dust had lifted and the men saw what had occurred, there was Jimmy safe at second, and Flynn a-hugging third. Then from the 5,000 throats and more there one rose a lusty yell. It rumbled through the valley and it rattled in the dell. It knocked upon the mountain and recoiled upon the flats. For Casey, mighty Casey, was advancing to the bat. There was an ease in Casey's manner as he stepped into his place. There was pride in Casey's bearing and a smile on Casey's face. And when responding to the cheers, he lightly doffed his hat. No stranger in the crowd could doubt 'twas Casey at the bat. 10,000 eyes were on him as he rubbed his hands with dirt. 5,000 tongues applauded, then he wiped them on his shirt. Then with a writhing pitcher ground the ball into his hip. Defiance gleamed in Casey's eyes. A sneer curled Casey's lip. And now the leather-covered sphere came hurtling through the air, and Casey stood a-watching it in haughty grandeur there. Close by the sturdy batsman, the ball unheeded sped. It ain't my style, said Casey. Strike one, the umpire said. From the benches black with people, there was a muffled roar, like the beating of a storm waves on a stern and distant shore. Kill him! Kill the umpire! Shouted someone in the stand, and it's likely they'd have killed him had not Casey raised his hand. With a smile of Christian charity, great Casey's visage shone. He stilled the rising tumult. He bade the game go on. He signaled to the pitcher, and once more the spheroid flew. But Casey still ignored it, and the umpire said, Strike two! Fraud! Cried the maddened thousands, and the echoes answered, Fraud! But from one scornful look from Casey, the audience was awed. They saw his face grow stern and cold, they saw his muscles strain, and they knew that Casey wouldn't let the ball go by again. The sneer is gone from Casey's lips, his teeth are clenched in hate. He pounds with cruel vengeance his bat upon the plate. And now the pitcher holds the ball, and now he lets it go, and now the air is shattered by the force of Casey's blow. Oh, somewhere in this favored land, the sun is shining bright. The band is playing somewhere, and somewhere hearts are light. And somewhere men are laughing, and somewhere children shout. But there is no joy in Mudville. Mighty Casey has struck out. Thanks for listening, guys. I'm Kevin from the Court of Nerd saying, in the book of life, you should never skip to the end. Bye.